Statistical decision errors. What we call a false alarm is technically known as a type 1 statistical decision error. The reason it's called a type 1 error, we hate it more. We're more afraid of it. Sometimes it's called alpha, but alpha has a whole bunch of different meanings, and we're not going to start an argument about that right now. The reason it's called a type 1 error is because false alarms have historically caused more problems than misses. Why? Typically, we hypothesize an effect, and if we find that effect, we're good, and we go on. Whereas if we hypothesize an effect and conclude a null, we say, must have screwed something up, bang it again. So type 1 errors introduce things into the literature, whether it's a theoretical or an applied literature, that sometimes take a long time to dig back out. Where do false alarms come from? Could be sampling variability. But also remember, this is an issue of statistical conclusion validity. It can come from other places. Bad samples, confounds, poor measures. Sound familiar? Bad sample, external validity, confounds, internal validity, poor measurement, measurement validity. Statistical conclusion validity is dependent upon the other three kinds of validity and chance. Promised. Type 2 statistical decision errors are called type 2 because we don't like them, but we're less afraid of them. They are, however, by far the most prominent and common type of error. Because the biggest problem in behavioral sciences is we run samples that are too small for the effect sizes we're looking for. That's why we will take a careful step back and talk about how statistical decision testing, null hypothesis significance testing, is tied to sample size and the different ways of approaching that. So where does a miss come from? Four of the same sources. Sampling. Bad sample. Now, let's differentiate these two. This is, you chose the wrong participants. Dramatic stuff, like you told me you were studying cats and you give me data from chipmunks. This is not, you made a mistake. This is, nature stepped in and screwed you. Okay? This is your fault. This is shit happens. Which, more often than not, has something to do with this, but let's not go there right now. Confounds. Confounds change results. Poor measures change results. And the fifth possibility of a source for a type 2 error is your sample size is too small. I just want to get these in one place for you. We'll come back to it. All right. Some of you, hold on. This is going to be new. Here is the layout for this. The only thing I've done is I've changed what I call this. Now we're talking about whether the variables are related or not, instead of whether the coin is fair or not. There is still a null. The variables are not related. That's where we start. There is still a not null. Variables are related. We make a decision, and one of these things is possible. And there is such a thing as a type 3 error. In fact, there are 9. The other 6 have to do with the interplay of bivariate and multivariate results. We'll talk about them when we get there. I really care about type 3 errors for you because we are not statisticians. We are data analysts. We are problem solvers. We are question answerers. When we hypothesize something, it has to be not just a statistical convenience, but a what we think describes the world. And so a type 3 error is really important. A type 3 error is correctly rejecting the null. You're right, there is a relationship between the variables in the population, but getting that relationship wrong, typically backwards. So you find that the treatment group outperforms the control group, and that's backwards from what's really real. You find a positive correlation, and that's backwards. How are we doing? That's a type 3 error. And they matter. Because a type 3 error is worse than the other two because it's freaking backwards. Yes?
I'll go back to the analogy what you were referring to, the coin flip one. In a coin flip experiment, say, would type 3 error be the probability of coin landing straight.
Nope. Type 3 error is you're right that the coin is unfair. But what you missed is that it's weighted so that the tail is supposed to happen more often. But you got more than the allowable number of heads. So you correctly decided that it was fixed, but you missed the kind of fixing. You thought it was a head increase when in fact it was a tail increase, and a really rare event given that. Does that help? Yeah, I'm blowing off the whole coin land on its side thing. Because that means this is the wrong table. I ain't doing that yet. We'll do that later. All right. So, type 3 error. Cling to that. Now, here's the real booger. This is the real problem in the whole process. If we knew what was true in the population, we wouldn't have to do the research. So, this cool little table that says, well, what did we find? And what's true? If we knew what was true, or we could find out what was true, we wouldn't get drugged through this entire mess. We wouldn't be reaching conclusions, we'd be stating facts, because we would have access to all of the data. Oops. So, what we have to, in our heads, translate this to is, given the available data besides our own, is our conclusion probably right or probably wrong? Not, is our conclusion right or wrong, but is it probably right or probably wrong? And this is where things get interesting, because right now we're going to act like there is real, stable findings out there that we're adding to. Obviously, the less stable the results, the more interesting our results are to sorting out that instability. And this is where things like meta-analyses will be so important. And that's why we end this semester with meta-analyses. And another thing that can be very helpful for this is Bayesian statistics, which are enjoying their fourth rise to precedence during the 40 years I've been around. And maybe it'll stick a little better than it has before. Bayesian statistics is a really cool piece of math. Love it. The difficulty is getting started with it within behavioral sciences. You have to start somewhere that's not the null. And that's not something we've been good at as a group. But I have high hopes, in part because there's now good software for it. And when there's good software for things, people dig in, try harder, and stick around longer. When you had to calculate the stuff by hand, and only the simplest of calculations were anything other than totally painful, it washed out in a few years. But it's sticking a little harder this time, and it would be a way of asking, how does our opinion about what's true in the population shift as we accrue data across studies? It has real potential, and all the old guys are hoping for it. All right, let's practice. We found that those in the treatment group performed the same as those in the control group. Treatment group, control group performed the same. No relationship between what group you're in and your performance, right? Are we going to retain or reject the null?
Reject the
null. The two groups are the same. There's no relationship. We good? The null is no relationship between what group you're in and your performance. There was none. We're going to retain the null. Step two. However, the other 10 studies all found the treatment group performed better. Are we probably right or probably wrong?
Probably wrong.
Probably wrong. Right? What kind of wrong? Type two. We said, there's nothing going on, and we were wrong. We found that those in the treatment group performed better than those in the control group. Are we going to retain or reject the null?
Reject.
This is the same thing everybody else found. Are we probably right or probably wrong?
Probably right.
What kind of right? Correct?
Rejection.
We rejected. It's correct. Correct rejection. I love it when the words mean the same thing. because you know they don't always. We found that those in the treatment group performed poorer than those in the control group. Retain or reject the null?
Reject.
There's a difference. The null is no difference. We got a difference. We're going to reject. But all of the other 10 studies in the field found the opposite effect. Are we probably right or probably wrong?
Probably.
What kind of wrong? How we doing? Okay. And as you might imagine, there's a pink thing. We found that those in the treatment group performed better than those in the control group. Retain or reject the null?
Reject.
We found a difference. The null is no difference. We're going to reject. But none of the other 10 studies in the field found any difference. Are we probably right or probably wrong?
Probably wrong.
What kind of wrong? Type 1. The other ones, yes. We found those in the treatment group performed the same as those in the control group. Retain or reject the null?
Retain.
This is the same thing everybody else found. Are we probably right or probably wrong?
Probably right.
What kind of right? Correct?
Correct retention.
Ta-da! How we doing? Here's another set to play with. The important thing is, in order to make the decision, because we have type 3 errors, in order to decide if we're probably right or probably wrong, we have to know what the effect was in the other studies, not just if there was an effect. And this is something to hold on to. You're no longer allowed to say, there's a mean difference. There's a pattern of difference. There's a correlation. If you're rejecting the null, there is a pattern or a direction to the result. And part of the effect is the pattern or direction of the effect, not just an effect. P less than 0.05 means go look at the data and tell me what the non-null description is. Don't say, I have an effect. Yes?
Given that there is a replication crisis, a replication crisis happening.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. Thank you. Nice mints, too. Awesome.
What if we are studying like a brand new relationship between variables?
Then I'll bet you that you only kind of are. Because there's some other DV that somebody's looked at that you know, or at least have a guess, how strongly your DV relates to theirs. And you know whether you intended your treatment to be stronger or maybe it's not stronger than whatever else is out there. So the argument is you're never completely in the woods. But it's a bigger pain in the ass. Because one of the first things you're going to have to do probably to get permission, which usually means resources, to do it is you're going to have to show why what you're doing is similar enough to make a decent guess, but different enough to be worthwhile. You have absolutely nailed the issue. But if everybody looking at a weaker effect than yours found an effect and you found a null, you're still pretty sure you missed something. Because your effect was supposed to be stronger than the others. And you caught a null. Does that help? So we're never completely out in the woods. We hope. And again, that's what meta-analysis is good for. Because when we do a meta-analysis and we grab these studies that are closest to ours, we're going to have a way of articulating, nearly quantifying, how similar they are. And that can really set us up for success. And usually leads to a change in the design we have in mind as we take a look at what else is there and how they differ from each other. Great question. All right. So let me show you this because I think it's funny.
Did I
what? Yes, I should do this as completely new. Thank you.